From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, biology, oil, and relief in the Ukraine. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. We had a very full show this past Thursday, and today we're going to share with you some of the highlights. We'll start off with a clip of President Biden talking about the strategic oil reserves.
My plan's going to help ease that pain today and safeguard against tomorrow. I'm open to ideas to strengthen the plan, but I'll not be put off and put it on hold. It's time to deliver true long-term energy independence in America once and for all, and I'm going to continue to use every tool at my disposal to protect you from Putin's price hike.
Is it Putin's price hike we need protection from, or a myopic administration that is throwing America's future to the wind? Joining me now to talk about this and more is Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell. Leader McConnell, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tony. Glad to be with you.
So first, let me get your thoughts on the latest plans coming out of the White House as it pertains to gasoline prices.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to convince anybody that Putin is the reason for high gas prices. That started at the beginning of the year and has escalated over the course of the year. And, of course, tapping into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve will have about as much impact as dropping a pebble in the ocean. But what the president really needs to do is to change directions in favor of domestic fossil fuel production. And in 2019, we were independent. We were energy independent. We were actually exporting oil and gas. This president came in. He shut down no new leases on public lands, canceled the Keystone pipeline. They're doing everything through their administrators in this administration to make it very difficult for us to produce domestically, while ironically at the same time encouraging regimes like Venezuela to increase production. What we need is a realistic U.S. fossil fuel production plan, which we had in the previous administration, and this administration has canceled.
Leader McConnell, given the volatility that we see in the world today, the war in Ukraine, we see North Korea making moves. We have this China, no telling what they might do. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve has a national security element to it. Is there not concern that this could be depleted and then we find ourselves even in a greater, really vulnerable position?
Yeah, this is not the kind of thing that the Strategic Petroleum Reserve was intended to be used for. Another thing you'd be interested in, Tony, a couple of years ago when oil prices were really low, we tried to purchase a lot of oil and gas to beef up the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, and the Democrats in Congress blocked it and claimed it was some kind of bailout for big oil. So their playbook is tap the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, have oil and gas CEOs come up before Congress and beat them up, blame everybody but themselves. But this administration wants every other country in the world to produce more oil and gas, but not us. They want us to be green. And that is an unrealistic approach that simply will not meet the needs of America. Or, we could be, once again, like we were in 2019, not only taking care of our own energy needs, but exporting
exactly.
as well.
Exactly, and not be in this vulnerable situation we're in. Let me, switching gears, you announced early on your intention not to vote after the hearing had completed with Ketanji Brown Jackson. You listed three reasons that you cannot support her. What are those three reasons?
Well, first, I thought she ought to echo Justice Ginsburg and Justice Breyer in opposing court packing. That's not asking her to take a position on anything that would come before, but rather a way to defend the institution of the court itself. And I always admired the fact that two very liberal Supreme Court justices, Breyer and Ginsburg, defended the institution. She wouldn't do that. Secondly, she had a record demonstrably soft on crime in general, and in particular, of all things, child pornography cases. In 100% of her decisions in child pornography cases on sentencing, they were below the sentencing guidelines. In other words, in every single case, with no exceptions, sentences doled out to these purveyors of this awful material received a lighter sentence than the lower end of the sentencing guidelines. I found that perplexing and very, very difficult to explain.
Especially when we're talking about children as the victims in many of these cases.
Yeah, I mean, it's
cases.
Heinous crime, and the recidivism rate is quite high, and the best way to make sure that doesn't happen is to have them off the streets.
Right. Based upon what you witnessed in the hearing, would you say her judicial philosophy puts her in the category of an activist judge?
Yeah, I think this is, she's certainly intelligent, well-qualified. She's going to be a judicial activist, and that's the kind of nomination you would expect from Joe Biden, and that's the kind of nomination we got.
Final question, we're up against the clock, but any chance that she does not find confirmation in the Senate?
No, I don't think so. All the Democrats are lined up, and at least one Republican is going to support her. We're in a 50-50 Senate. I think she will be confirmed. The good news, Tony, is it's 6-3.
Yeah.
And you may recall I had a major role to play.
You certainly did.
Putting not one, three new Supreme Court justices in place during the previous administration.
Very quickly, that 50...
Scalia vacancy during the 2016 election. So the good news is it doesn't change much.
That's true. It doesn't. Very quickly, the 50-50 split, does that change in November?
Sure hope so.
Abortion, pornography, and human trafficking all violate human dignity, treating people as objects to be bought, sold, and discarded. At Family Research Council, we believe that every person is made in the image of God and has inherent dignity and worth. FRC's Center for Human Dignity serves to give a voice to the voiceless by providing helpful resources that help you fight against abortion, pornography, human trafficking, and more. Access these resources and support life by visiting frc.org/life.
Yesterday, the United Nations Refugee Agency reported that more than 4 million people have fled Ukraine since Russia launched its invasion on February the 24th. That number exceeds the worst-case predictions made at the start of the war. Joining me now to talk about what he and his team have been seeing and doing on the ground there in Eastern Europe is Samaritan's Purse President Franklin Graham, who was in Ukraine this past weekend. Franklin, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to be with you.
Well, as always, Samaritan's Purse there on the ground where needed. First, give us a sense of what you saw there on the ground.
Well, Tony, the flood of refugees that was coming out of the country has now slowed down to a trickle. As you've mentioned, about 4 million have already left. There are now some refugees returning, and I think this is because the Russians, at the very beginning of the war, looked like they were going to take the whole country in just a matter of weeks. Well, that hasn't happened, and so there are a lot of people just are staying put, waiting to see what happens. So the people that are on the move are not like what we saw earlier. However, the country still has probably somewhere around 2 to 3 million displaced people inside the country. They have left their homes, they've lost their homes, but instead of going to Poland or Slovenia, they're still inside the Ukraine. We've set up a hospital in Lviv. We have two clinics in Lviv, one at the train station, one down at a bus station. And then we are setting up now a second hospital. And this hospital is closer to the fighting. It's about a four-hour drive to the east near, I don't want to say which border it's there, but it's closer, much, much closer to the fighting. We're doing food distribution, Tony. We've distributed about 90,000 metric tons of food. This is food that we've been able to buy or was given to us. And no government agencies are involved in it. It's just private donations, and we're very thankful for it. Right now, Tony, there's a lot of the UN agencies are just not there. And I don't know if they are afraid of offending Russia or whatever the case may be, but you just don't see many organizations in the country. The need is great, and I wish more people would be willing to come. But right now, it's just, it is what it is. We want to help as many people as we can. Of course, I want to do it in the name of Jesus Christ. Don't I want people to know that God loves them. That's so important that people know that God has not left Ukraine. God is there, and all that one has to do is call on him and call on the name of his son, and God will hear, I believe, from heaven. And so important that it's important that we're there in Jesus' name.
Right. And Samaritan's Purse is a part of that prayer being answered by the people there in Ukraine crying out to God for help. But I find this troubling. I think, Franklin, this is Europe's largest refugee crisis since World War II and perhaps one of the largest humanitarian crises of our time. These things should be beyond politics. UN should not be worried about offending Russia when you have such a great need there on the ground.
Well, you would think so, but these UN agencies are huge, and they're very political, and they march to a different drummer. So, if you take like the World Food Program, we have a great guy, Governor Beasley, former governor of South Carolina, who's in charge of the World Food Program. But he can give directions and he can give orders, but the bureaucrats down underneath him, they throw a monkey wrench into it, and things just don't happen.
Well, and that's why it's so great to have organizations like Samaritan's Purse. And you're connected with over 3,000 churches there on the ground that you've been working with for since back in the 90s. We've been getting updates from George Thomas and others on the ground there in Ukraine. What's your sense of how the church is doing and how they're responding to this crisis?
I think the church is doing incredible. Tony, we've made $16 million available to the churches. This is direct cash gifts that we're giving to the churches so that they have a little war chest to work with. People come to the church, the local churches, for food. They come for clothing, and that's what the church should do. And so we're helping these pastors financially so they can go out on the market and buy additional things that they might need. And we're working very closely with the Baptist and Pentecostal churches inside the Ukraine. And it's going to be a long process, right, Tony, but we're just going to stay with it.
Franklin, we only got 30 seconds left, but you've written to the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, the Ukrainian president, Zelensky, asking for a ceasefire on Holy Week.
That's correct. That's starting now on Good Friday and then going through the next week, which is the 24th, which is the Orthodox Easter. They're on the Gregorian calendar. And if I just feel that they can stop for 10 days, then they can stop for a month. If they can stop for a month, maybe they can stop for good. You got to start somewhere, Tony.
Right.
And so we had channels where we could get a letter to President Putin, and we sent that letter. I don't expect to hear back from him, but who knows? Maybe we'll see a ceasefire this Easter.
Well, we'll be praying, and we'll challenge the church here in the United States and around the world, viewers and listeners here, to pray to that end. Franklin Graham, always great to be with you, and we're going to encourage people that can partner with you to do so and help the work that Samaritan's Purse is doing there on the ground.
Thank you, Tony.
And folks, I do want to encourage you to do that. Go to the website, tonyperkins.com. I tell you, I've worked with Samaritan's Purse side by side. There is not an organization that I have more confidence in than Samaritan's Purse. So help them, pray for them, be a part of what they're doing. Coming up next, more from Capitol Hill. The situation on our southern border is about to get even worse, And Congress is moving to hold the NCAA accountable.
Do you find it challenging to stick to reading God's Word daily? Then join Family Research Council on an exciting journey through the Bible. The Stand on the Word 2-year Bible reading plan takes you through the Bible so that you can stay grounded in God's truth. Start this adventure today with FRC. When you sign up, we text you every Sunday with daily passages and questions that help you prepare for conversations with your friends and your family. To begin this journey, visit frc.org/Bible.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us. The website, tonyperkins.com. Lots of resources there for you. In fact, if you happen to be outside of the range of a radio station, you can watch the program right there at tonyperkins.com. In fact, share that with your friends that you want to invite to be a part of the Washington Watch family. Yesterday, the House Freedom Caucus issued a Dear Colleague letter calling on House Democrats to back a discharge petition that would force a vote on legislation to keep Title 42 border protections in place for the near future. Now, I've talked about this previously on the program. We had Senator James Lankford on just a couple of days ago talking about this. Title 42 public health order was implemented by President Trump, by the Trump administration in March of 2020, and allows for the rapid expulsion of migrants that are trying to come across the southern border because of a health crisis, the COVID, simply turning them around. Well, the Biden administration kept part of it in place, turning around single individuals, but allowing families to enter. The result has been about half of those illegally coming across the border have been turned back. The other half have been let in with a slip of paper saying show up to court in 6 years. Well, if the Department of Homeland Security does what is expected, and that is to move forward with lifting Title 42 restrictions, which could come as early as this week, we could see an absolute explosion of the crisis on this border. In fact, some are estimating that within a six-week period, we could see as many as 1 million illegal immigrants cross the border. And Congressman Chip Roy has been championing this in the House. He's a member of the House Freedom Caucus. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tony, good to be on. Sorry a few minutes late. I just finished voting.
Well, we were just discussing the where things stand with Title 42, the fact that there were 164,973 encounters, migrant encounters last month. That is a dramatic increase from a year ago. And that's still with this Title 42 in place. When it's removed, what might we be looking at the border?
Yeah, so just so everybody understands, right, if you look at March, we've had about 100,000 encounters in the first half of March, of whom about 50,000 were removed or turned away, if you will, under Title 42. The other half were released into the United States, roughly. These are rough numbers. If you extend that through March, that would be 200,000 or more, and about 100,000 turned away under Title 42. So if you get the drift, if you get rid of Title 42, then that other 100,000 are going to be released into the United States of America. Last year, that number was close to 1 million that was turned away by Title 42 that would have been released into the United States. We don't know for sure because some of these are repeat folks. It is an unconscionable act by the department, or the secretary, I should say, of Homeland Security in consultation with and with the CDC director. Right? I think it's the CDC that technically would end Title 42, but it's the secretary who has the job to go talk to the CDC director and say, look, we got to be able to enforce the law. We still have masks on airplanes. We still have mandatory jabs for our military. We still have a public health emergency declared. We still have people around the world with COVID and other communicable diseases. It's absolutely outrageous that they would end this. And it just underscores their lack of resolve and seriousness. And in fact, their purposeful dereliction of duty and endangering the American people and the migrants who seek to come here.
My understanding, Congressman Roy, is that there are those just south of the border waiting to be able to come across. So we're looking at a surge waiting for this change in federal law.
Yeah, this is absolutely correct. We don't know the exact numbers. People like Todd Bensman, my friend, he's in Austin. He tracks these numbers. There are others. Bill Malugin's been reporting a lot of this for Fox. But there are large groups that are ready and looking to come across the Rio Grande. The word is getting out that Title 42 is ending, that there are virtually no limits on coming to the United States, literally virtually none. We are now seeing increased Russians and Ukrainians. And look, there may be individuals in all of this that have some legitimate claim to asylum under our laws, but it is few and far between. The vast majority are, and I don't begrudge this, neither do you, Tony, as a Christian, people who are seeking a better life. They want jobs, right. They want opportunity. But we cannot sustain a wide-open border.
But look, we welcome everyone to come here, but come here legally. We've got a process. Right. We've got to work the process in order to assimilate people into our country. I want to switch gears because very quickly I need to move on, but I want to talk about your reactions, rather, to the decision yesterday from out of Finland regarding the Finnish parliamentarian Pave Rosanen, who was found not guilty. Both you and I spoke out. We wrote a joint op-ed on this case, this Christian political leader who was charged with hate speech. The court got it right in this case. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, you and I, both honor to speak for you, we are so prayerfully grateful that this was the result, right? Prayer matters. Support from people around the world matters. This is a great result for freedom of religion, freedom of speech worldwide. However, this should never have been in court.
Right.
This should never have been prosecuted. There should never be laws that even open the door to this possibility. We shouldn't be engaging in thought crimes that then put the Bible on trial. That's what happened here. Now, we fortunately got a good result from this court. But understand that with the Equality Act here in the United States, with the direction that this country wants to seem to go in terms of thought crimes, with the direction this country, with the World Health Organization, which is talking about abortion as a human right, the global Magnitsky deal that got expanded when we voted on the Russian trade bill. I got all yelled at because I was one of eight that voted no, because I didn't want to empower the executive to go after anybody around the world for human rights violations, which might include, for example, standing up for life,
right,
or standing up for a marriage between a man and a woman. This is a warning shot, everybody.
Right.
If you're listening to this, understand that trial is a preview of things to come. We are blessed. God bless them for standing up. God bless the court for doing the right thing. But really importantly, God bless them for refusing to bow down.
Yeah, absolutely. I cannot agree with you more. It is a warning of things to come. And we need to right now determine we're going to stand and defend these freedoms. Chip Roy, thanks so much for joining us. Always great to talk with you.
You too. God bless, my friend. Take care.
Well, transitioning to yet another topic that has been in the news, the issue with the NCAA, with the highly publicized dominance of the transgender UPenn swimmer, Leah Thomas, the issue of fairness in female sports has been making waves. And more are speaking out in defense of girls and women in the face of criticism from the left. Now, earlier today, Republicans in the House sent a letter to the NCAA president, Mark Emmert, over the Title IX violations that took place during the NCAA's Division I College Swimming and Diving Championship, and more broadly, through the whole season. Joining me now to talk about this is Congressman Mary Miller. She is among those leading the charge on this. She represents the 15th Congressional District of Illinois. Congresswoman Miller, welcome back to the program.
Why, thanks for having me. I also represent women and the mother of daughters.
Yes, you are. You're a grandmother as well. And
I am.
This is a common sense issue. What's going on here?
Well, this is a continuing attack on the American way of life and our values. They are pushing another thing that is wildly unpopular among Americans, and there is no way that they are stupid or uninformed. These are deliberate attacks on the American way of life. This is an attack on women and girls' athletic opportunities, which was the whole purpose of Title IX.
Right. So, Mary, give us some details about the letter that you sent to Mark Emmert.
Yes, so it was led with Congressman Gohmert from Texas and myself, and signed by 28 other House Republicans. And we're calling on the National Collegiate Athletic Association to bar biological men from competing in women's sports. And we, in the letter, we called it a grave injustice because that's what it is.
Well, and you look at what's happening across the country, state after state, is they're adopting laws that do just that. They prohibit biological men from competing in women's sports.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because for the past 2 years, they keep calling themselves the party of science. And this is, it's laughable. It's unscientific. And just today, I was hearing about someone who is a registered Democrat, has two children in Maryland schools, and she is very upset because they're elementary children, and they're trying to tell the boy that he wants to be a girl and the girl that she wants to be a boy. And the mother's very upset. And when I say this is wildly unpopular, I don't mean just among Republicans and Christians, but anybody that has a brain.
So Mary, could we be at one of those tipping points where the left has gone so far that just, you know, as you said, not the conservative per se, but just the average person out there saying, you know what, this is crazy. We're not going here.
Right. Well, I think it is an opportunity point for us. And for us as Christians, we know what's wrong is we kicked God out of everything, or we tried to, obviously, can't kick him out. And, you know, we've kicked our foundation out. But the fact is that our country was founded on Judeo-Christian values, and those are the values that most Americans hold to. And I think it's a good opportunity point for Christians to point out to people that if you do away with God, you're just swimming in an abyss of bad ideas. And where is this heading? I mean, even the LGBTQ, elemental P thing, I mean, let's face it, I think they're heading toward, you know, they want to legalize pedophilia and other unmentionable things.
Yeah, it is, you are absolutely right. It is the result of removing the very foundation of our country, and that is biblical truth. Mary Miller, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us. And by the way, congratulations on your award as a true blue member of Congress.
It's an honor. Thank you so much.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us, and I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.